in your books. The scripture that the Lord gave me for this lesson is, create in me a clean heart, O Lord, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. And as I finish teaching, you'll see how that scripture just ties in with codependency. I'm going to just go over this very quickly about what is definition of codependency. Codependency was coined in the 1970s in the context of treating alcoholism. Alcoholics were observed to share a somewhat consistent set of behaviors, and as therapists treated families of alcoholics, they observed that the family members also exhibited a fairly consistent pattern of behavior. The alcoholic was dependent on alcohol. The family was also negatively affected, so the members were called codependents. Originally, the word codependent was applied only to the families of alcoholics. Later, the term was given to families of those who were dependent on any kind of behavior and or drug, including alcohol, like the things we talked about in the beginning of the class. Today, the word is used to describe anyone in a significant relationship with a person who exhibits any kind of dependency. Some of these dependencies are more subtle. I'm not going to, because we've talked about those. Anyhow, it's those who are adversely affected by the dependent person's behavior and who have and you can underline this, an unbalanced sense of responsibility to rescue, fix, and or help the dependent person, our codependent, okay? The dependent person either consciously or unconsciously deprives the codependent of needed love and attention. This provokes rescuing as a means of obtaining that affirmation. For the purpose of our groups, codependency is defined as an unconscious compulsion to control and rescue people by fixing their problems. Codependency occurs when a person's God-given needs for love and security have been blocked in a relationship with an unhealthy person, resulting in three primary characteristics. You will have a lack of objectivity, the inability to see reality as it is, especially where that other person is concerned. You won't be able to see reality as it is. You will have a warped sense of responsibility towards that other person, and another characteristic is being controlled and controlling others. The goal in the codependent's life is to avoid the pain of being unloved and to find ways to prove that they are lovable. Now, in 1 Peter 4:15, it mentions codependency. It doesn't use the word codependency, but it says this. It mentions the meddler in the affairs of others. In the same list with a murderer or a thief. The Amplified New Testament mentions that the meddler is infringing on another person's rights. The codependent often meddles and infringes on the rights and the responsibility of loved ones to care for and take responsibility for themselves. The codependent is usually in denial concerning this because he sees himself as what? Helping that other person. Right? You're just helping them after all. Codependency. We define codependency as an effort to control interior feelings, control what's happening on the inside of you. It's about you. It's not about the other person. It's about you. It's not about the other person. It's about your unresolved issues, not about the other person. We define it as an effort to control interior feelings, what's happening on the inside, by manipulating people, things, and events on the outside. Codependency is the most self-centered thing there is. But the twist is it doesn't look like that. The twist is it looks like you are really serving the other person. But if you really get down underneath all the lies about it, you're serving yourself, because if they're okay, you're okay. And you're going to be okay no matter what, so that means you're going to fix them so they're okay. Because it's about internally what's going on in you. It's a compulsion to control and rescue people by fixing their problems. It's bondage to pleasing somebody. It's being controlled by someone and trying to control him or her. And this is my very favorite one. Codependency is trying to make a sick person well, but ending up sick yourself. And that's exactly what happens. It comes with the package of the unhealthy family. If you grew up in an unhealthy family, you will have issues of codependency. We learned it as children. We learned to please them. So internally we felt okay and safe, because it wasn't safe. Okay, so we learned it very young. We learned to read people's body language, right? We learned to do that as children. Think about it. I learned to read whether, you know, I could walk in a room and tell you how many drinks my mother had. Learned it as a kid. Why wouldn't I? I had to. I had to learn to do that. See? And, you know, as children, some of those were coping things that I believe were God-given, or we wouldn't be sitting here today in this room, and that's the truth. But you know what? What happened is it turned into codependent behavior. So now we walk around, you know, just being almost obsessed with reading people's body language, with especially those who we're in relationship with. So, or that mean something to us that we have an investment in somehow, whether it's a boss or a pastor or, I mean, or a friend, you know. Codependency can be an issue in all relationships. It will be if you grew up in an unhealthy family. It's related to power in relationships. Whenever the other person's behavior has more control over you than God does, you are codependent. Need fulfillment. Whenever your needs and expectations of others control you more than God does, you are codependent. And emotions. Whenever your hurt, disappointment, anger, fear, insecurity control you more in a relationship than God does, you are codependent. I used to be so codependent with Earl. If he was mad at me, I couldn't function. I literally could not function. Couldn't go on with my day. If he was mad at me, I couldn't go on with my day. And that was after God broke the love addiction. Now it's about codependent behavior. And he was also as much codependent with me. And I could see, and sometimes he still does it to me, but, you know, I'm healthy enough to say, you know, to talk about it. But it's like, sometimes, in our relationship, I was always expected to what? Be up and happy and, you know. So if I wasn't, that was just too much for him. Okay? So he was codependent on me there, and I was codependent on him. It was a wonderful, sick, another part of our relationship. See? So, what are the characteristics? You'll often tiptoe around the person for fear of offending them or triggering their anger or wanting to make your best impression on them. You will say, I have to walk on eggshells. No, you don't. You are choosing that behavior. You are choosing to walk on eggshells. See, so again, all of this stuff, you have to go back to the Lord and say, Lord, what is it in me that needs healing, that I can't be honest enough in this relationship, and I'm so fearful that I walk on eggshells? See, again, it's not about that other person. It's about us getting healthy enough to stop walking on eggshells and to start being honest in the relationship. And it really is about dishonesty, I believe. You know, that's a part, keeping the peace at all costs, you know. And also, if you walk on eggshells and you always want to make your best impression, you never get to be who you really are. You always have a mask on. For a long time, I couldn't let that mask of being so up all the time off. You know? Because it threw Earl into a really funny place, and I was so codependent with him. You know, do you see how that whole thing works? It's like, so I wore a mask all the time, and so did he, until I got healthy enough to stop doing that. And I had to let him be mad, sad, whatever he had to be, and I had to be okay with that. Everybody gets to choose. See, the other stuff's about manipulating people anyway. In codependency, you'll often feel less than the other person or unequal to the other person, or what's the other side of the pendulum, or superior to them or better than them. And you know, I worked hard and long on my codependent issues, and then I went to this seminar called Women and Their Relationship with Men. And they talked about the other side of the pendulum, codependency, because I always felt less than Earl or unequal to him. And all I had done is swung to the other side of the pendulum, which felt a little bit better to me. But it still wasn't about healthiness. It wasn't about health. Feeling superior or better is still not about being in a healthy relationship. In codependency, you feel you don't measure up to them, but you want to. Or they don't measure up to you, and you have to fix them so that they do. In a conflict, you'll tend to be defensive and or evasive. Earl was always defensive, and so what was I? I was always evasive, always. Not honest. Both is not about being honest in a relationship. In healthy relationships are honest. In a conflict, you'll have difficulty seeing and accepting your own sin. Your tendency will be to blame the other person. You'll feel you need to prove yourself right and the other person wrong. Or you'll give in just to keep the peace, which builds resentment, which turns into bitterness. If you are a person that constantly gives in just to keep the peace, you probably have some resentment. Because it's about not being honest in the relationship. And there's underlying issues about why you won't be honest. Usually it's about abandonment. You're afraid they'll leave or whatever. There's all kinds of issues underneath there. You'll have difficulty controlling your tongue and ruling your spirit. You'll end up feeling you're wrong and that you should have never brought up the issue. You'll tend to withdraw and avoid it. You never talk about what's bothering you. So you'll withdraw, which is about silent nights, which is abusive too. Or you'll avoid it. You'll avoid it at all costs. So you never, you know, really, you guys, you never get to have an honest relationship. In honest relationships, you lay the cards on the table. You know that? I'm telling you what, and that's hard to do because we never learned to do that, right? What did we learn? We learned to stuff. We learned to not tell. We learned to not trust that we could lay the cards on the table. Okay? You got to start somewhere, though. You got to start somewhere. You'll have difficulty. Oh, you'll only, and I hated this one. You'll only go as far to resolve as the other person goes. And so when they told me the first one at the cross wins, I thought, well, let him go first. Let him win this one, you know. But that's what happens. So you know if you're not willing, it's because you have some codependency, some stuff going on there. You'll have difficulty speaking the truth in love. You'll not be totally honest and vulnerable with the other person because of your fear of what? For me, it was fear of him leaving me. And you know what? Earl enhanced that fear because he told me he would, which got me back in the, you know, the game again, or the sick game again. Or you'll be brutally cutting and honest about their weaknesses, see? Or you'll spend a lot of time second-guessing their motives, thoughts, and actions. You know, I tell people, stop guessing, ask the question. Ask the question. If you can't ask the question, what's your fear? Stop. You can't. Nobody can guess what another person is thinking or what their motives are. You need to ask the questions. Or the other thing, you'll be nursing and rehearsing their shortcomings and their need for change, especially around other people. Of course, you'll never talk to them about it, but you'll nurse it and rehearse it with everybody else. And if you have people that do that, you need to tell them or you need to encourage them that you're not going to listen anymore if they're not willing to do anything to change it.
Can you give an example of that?
Well, I have a friend who's always telling me about different situations with her husband about how he's he you know, he is this and he's that and he's this and he's that. But she will never confront him about it. She just nurses and rehearses that thing over and over again. And you know what? What happens with nursing and rehearsing, you do get some relief. you get to unload some, okay? So there's some relief in that, but there's no resolve in that. There's no resolve in that. And you know what? The other thing is this, is that if you cannot sit down with a person, whether it's a friend or a pastor or a husband or a parent, and talk to them, then get a third party, a mediator. When Earl and I first started our journey, trust me, we couldn't talk about anything. You know, really, we had to have a third party every time until we got healthy enough to be able to get over some of that stuff. So don't be afraid to bring in a mediator when you need to, when you're starting the journey. But don't surprise the other person with it. Be honest about it. You know. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Sort of like, okay, we can't seem to get through this. So, you know what? We probably need a third party. Healthy people, when they need help, they go get it. Healthy people, when they need help, they go get that help. And it takes both people to get help. And if the person that you are with is saying, I won't get any help, that's a pretty big message. That's a pretty big message. And you need to consider what they're saying to you. And you need to ask some further questions. So are you saying you don't want to work on a relationship? That's a pretty big message. So you have to hear what the other person's saying. They get to decide too, just like you get to decide. I am incredibly fortunate that Earl has always wanted to go get the help and bent his knee to the Lord. Again, not it's always as fast as I thought he should, but, you know, my standard. But I think we all feel like that as women, like if we're honest. So if you're nursing and rehearsing their shortcomings and need for change, again, whether it's a parent or whatever, this isn't just about spouses or a friend or whatever, but you're not willing to talk about it with the other person or confront it, stop nursing and rehearsing it. Sometimes it's time to put up or shut up. It's the truth. Or you'll seem to set yourself up for failure no matter what you do. You'll feel damned if you do or damned if you don't. And the person's disapproval will cause you to feel crushed, anxious, guilt-ridden, fearful, and tormented, or very frustrated, angry, resentful, and vengeful. Why? Because that person, you're so codependent with that person, their approval means way too much. It has too much power in your life. You know, if we could only get to the place where we only wanted God's approval. I doubt if that will ever happen for any of us because we're humans. But, you know, that's why did Jesus never fail? He only did what his Father asked him. He was only looking for his Father's approval. There will be an inordinate grief due to the loss of the other person's esteem or approval of you, or the loss of your position, identity, and reputation with that person. And my first sponsor that I had in Waterloo, Iowa, and I gave her way too much power in my life, which is very common. She was not only my sponsor in the 12-step program, but she really was a spiritual mentor to me also. And you know, when we moved out, she totally disapproved of me doing this in the church and all that kind of stuff. And when I was in Waterloo, Iowa, I really felt like the Spirit of the Lord began to speak to me way back then about doing 12 steps, something in the churches. Well, we've been out here 16, almost 17 years now, so that was probably 20 years ago or so before it was ever thought of in the church. And I know today that was the Holy Spirit speaking to me. But I gave her so much power in my life, she absolutely poo-pooed it. She just kind of, and there was no way on God's green earth that I would have ever done that there. That's the truth. And for a long, long time after I moved out here, she kept sending me tapes regarding about never looking back, you know, how you never go back. It's just, you know, anyhow. And we finally had the talk regarding that issue. We finally had the talk. See, but I couldn't have done that back there. I know I couldn't have. I know I had to physically be, you know, we are still really, really good friends today. And she still lives in Marlow, but she comes out here in the wintertime. And I think in March she's going to go to my 4-day seminar in California. And that should be interesting. And it's okay. I'm happy that she's going to go. And I don't feel any sense of like, oh my gosh, what will she think? And will she approve? It doesn't matter, you know. And we took different paths. It's okay. She speaks all over the United States in the 12-step program, all over. She's an incredible speaker. She's an incredible woman. I love her. She had an incredible influence in my life. And I thank God every day that he brought somebody like her in my life. Every day. But we went different paths. It's all right. It's okay. But I know that if I would have stayed back there, I could have never done it with her there. And that wasn't about her. That was about me. Do you see how that is? I was the one that was codependent with her. You'll be afraid to act without the other person's approval and support, and that's what I just talked about. Or you'll avoid being honest about your actions and will tend to minimize or exaggerate to make yourself look good. Because again, it's always one side or the other of the pendulum. Now, several types of codependency are prevalent today. There's spousal codependency. That occurs when a wife or husband becomes so invested in the behavior of the spouse that their happiness depends completely on the actions and the attitudes of the spouse. If you're happy, I'm happy. And that's kind of what we were like. If I was happy, Earl was happy. See? It's sort of like, you know, that old joke that they say, if mama's happy, everyone's happy. The codependent spouse becomes obsessed with what the husband or wife is not doing or is doing. Now, when God began to break my codependency with Earl, I was so codependent with Earl, I laid out all of his clothes. Because he was an extension of me, and after all, I wanted him to look good at all moments. Because I wanted to look good at all moments. And I'd put out clothes that we matched a lot, you know, and it was real cute and, you know, a little sick, but it was cute. And then I realized that I didn't want to be his mama anymore. And that it was about my codependency with him, because it was like he was an extension of me. And so I said to him, this is not good for me. Again, it was about me. This isn't good for me, and I'm not going to do this for you anymore. Now, do you think he was real happy about that? Wouldn't you like every day of your life to have your clothes laid out on the bed for you? See? I mean, some people would really like that. I wouldn't like it either, you know. But he liked that, okay? So I stopped doing it, and he wasn't very happy. And then what he did, he would put outfits on that he knew would really disturb me. And he really would. I mean, he did it intentionally, and then he'd show up at church or something. And I had to work through that because, you know, I had to break that thing in me. That was about me and my codependency with him, that he was an extension of me and who I was and blah, blah, blah. So anyhow, so then after that whole thing was kind of broken in me, and you kind of know when it's broken, when they can come to church and look ridiculous and it really doesn't matter. And, you know, it's like you look and you think, it looks ridiculous, but hey, you know, it's him, it's not me. You really realize that you aren't an extension of that person. And anyhow, so then he said to me, and Earl is kind of colorblind, so that adds to the problem. So he said to me, do you think that you could do that for me again? Well, now because I wasn't codependent anymore, I could make a reasonable choice. I could really decide. I didn't have to do it anymore. And so I thought, well, he's asking me to do that. He is kind of colorblind. I can make a decision because I love him. And he's asking me, I can do that for him. but I wasn't invested anymore. So guess what? There'd be days I'd forget to do it because I wasn't, do you understand about how you get invested? So then he thought I did that on purpose to him. See? So that didn't work for us either. Because then, you know, he thought I did it on purpose. And I it was not doing it on purpose. I wasn't investing. So I finally said, okay, let's look at this. This is what I can do. I can buy you all navy blue or black pants and shirts that would go with any of them. So you can walk in your closet and you can pick out a shirt and it's all going to be fine, you know. So that helped him. You know, it helped him. And, hey, I don't have to be his mom anymore, nor codependent with him. And it, you know what? There was a freedom for both of us there. I mean, it was interesting for me to see even Earl. I mean, I knew how I felt inside myself and how that was such a freedom for me. But at first he kind of was upset over it. But I could see him get freer and freer there himself and then get to the point where, yeah, taking responsibility for ourselves is a very good thing, see. So anyhow, that's just a little sideline about what happens. And this that was just that dressing thing was something that the Lord worked through with me. Some issues are deeper than dressing, but that was for us one of them. Okay. The spouse of the addict often becomes bitter, overwhelmed, and controlling as the results of living with the addiction while not understanding the devastating effects on themselves. Family of origin codependency. In our earlier lecture on family system, we explored this type of codependency occurs when children assume rigid roles instead of successfully completing their developmental stages. In adult life, this type of codependency often becomes coupled with spousal codependency since children from this type of family have greater risk of becoming addicts themselves or marrying addicts or dysfunctional persons because that becomes the norm for us. That's what we're drawn to. That's what works. And then I'm not going to go through the employer-employee codependency thing. I want to talk about sibling codependency, though. You know, let me talk a little bit about, in here, this talks about like if somebody's an alcoholic on the job. But I see it even in a deeper sense, if somebody's not doing their job, and if you are so codependent, you will never come forward with that kind of information. And you know what? If somebody is not doing their job, you need to come forward with that kind of information. So it's not just about being like someone who's drinking on the job or something like that. When you are in a work environment and somebody is not doing the job that they're paid for, sometimes you need to give that information. Or what happens? They just keep getting paid for not doing their job. And it affects everything. Just like in the alcoholic themselves, affects everything. It's the same in the workplace. Somebody who is not taking their right responsibility. Remember, that's what it's about in family systems too. It's the same in the system, like in the church or the work environment. There's a system there too. Does that make sense? You can have sibling codependency. Well, the symptoms of sibling codependency are similar to those of spousal codependency. The difference is that the adult sibling often do not live together. Thus, the non-addict addicted sibling often has the erroneous belief that he or she is not really affected by the other sibling's addictive behavior. Now, that's what my daughter said always about her brother, that it did not affect her. Well, when her dad would come out, he usually comes out once a year, maybe once every 2 years. And before her brother was sober, she would not hardly go over there at all. Okay? Now, after her brother got sober, when her father would come to town, even though he was still an active alcoholic, my daughter spent much more time with all of them as a family unit. And she said, and I said to her, I said, honey, I said, I'm noticing that you're really spending a lot of time, you know, with my son, her brother and the grand and her nephews and our daughter-in-law and her dad. And she said, you know what I realized, Mom? She said, I always thought that it was my dad's drinking that bothered me the most. But she said, what I realized, it was my brother's. See, that's who she was the closest to. Of course it was affect her. As much as she said it didn't, it totally affected her. So, let's see. Oh, then there's parental codependency. Like spousal and sibling codependency, parental codependency is characterized by excessive concern and controlling behavior. Denial that the problem is as severe as it is. And this can happen starting from teenage up. You can be, I was so totally codependent with my son. It was unbelievable. I lied for him. I hid things. I mean, just absolutely, you know, all the things. Go down the list of enabling behaviors. I did all of those things regarding my son. And when God broke that for me and my son, for me, again, because it wasn't about him, it was about me, remember? It's not about that other person, it's about what needs healing in us. So my son was at treatment the second time, court ordered to go, and that's when we went through the family sessions and stuff, and I had sufficient recovery by that time to realize that I had been incredibly codependent with him and had really worked on that issue, codependency overall, but particularly the issue with him. Because in my recovery, because I had so made him responsible for my emotional well-being, I literally had to say out loud, I am divorcing him emotionally. Because that's what we do. We get so hooked in emotionally with our kids there, because I was so codependent. Anyhow, and likewise, this last time in treatment, he had to divorce me too, because he was highly codependent on me too, because that's what happens in the family system. Anyhow, one night we had gone to bed, Earl and I, and it was about 10 o'clock and the phone rang, and I picked up the phone, and there was this voice on the other end of the phone that I didn't recognize at first, and I could tell that this person was crying, and it was like I couldn't tell who it was, and all of a sudden, as they kept talking, I realized it was my son. He was in treatment for the second time, and he was just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing and realizing some of the cruelties that had happened to him in our home, and, you know, just coming into some realizations of the pain that was in his own life. And I talked to him like I, you know, and just, you know, told him I was glad that he was starting to face that stuff, that yes, it was true, and, you know, that I was sorry that some of that stuff happened, and, you know, we talked a little bit, and, you know, I hung up, and I turned over, and I went sound asleep. And I didn't realize till morning what an incredible, awesome thing it was that I hung up, and I turned over and went sound asleep. Because in my highly codependent days with him, I would have been in the car down at the treatment center to make sure he really was okay. See? Because I had to rescue him. I was the only one that could fix him. I couldn't trust God with him. My gosh, I couldn't trust those people at the treatment center with him. I had to be the one. And when I woke up the next morning realizing that I talked to him, he was in probably the most pain that I'd ever heard for a long time from him. I talked to him. I could be reasonable. I mean, yes, of course, I cried a little bit myself because, you know, it hurts to hear you. See, I mean, it's just a response you have. But you know what? I hung up the phone and I turned over and I went sound back to sleep. Now, that was a miracle, you guys, because how long had I tried to fix that kid? Well, since he started using, since he was 16. He was 25 at this time. So for all those years, God had been dealing with me regarding that issue with my son. You know? So what can parents do who are codependent with their children who are still using, whatever that looks like? You have to learn about addictions and the symptoms yourself and the solutions. You can do an intervention either with a professional or alone. You have to seek professional treatment. You need help too, right? You have to understand what are the enabling behaviors that you do that keep the cycle going. You always getting them out of a jam? Are you always giving them money? Are you always, you know, there's certain things that keep the cycle going for our children also. And when we are highly codependent, we can't let go of that. We don't trust God with them. And, you know, that is really the bottom line. We do not trust God. That is really the bottom line issue. Low level of trust.
Wendy, can it be codependency too if you're just, let's say, they're not addicted to anything, but if you're, like, you want to save them from any pain that you went through, and you're, like, controlling?
Well, it could be. Yeah, probably is. Yeah, probably is. Because you know what? Yeah, and what happens, in fact, there was, I did my four-day seminar this weekend, and there was a gal there who said that her parents sheltered her from everything. She was ill-equipped for life. She had no equipping. Life happens, you guys. We cannot, it's unrealistic to think that you can shelter your children from anything, from everything, okay? Should we as parents shelter them? We should try to shelter them, but not from life experiences. You know, meaning, should we shelter them from sexual abuse? You better believe it. You better be vigilant watching for that kind of stuff. You absolutely, any kind of abuse, be vigilant with that. Ask the Lord, if you've had that issue in your own life, you probably have no boundaries there, so you don't know what is normal or what's not normal, and you might not have your antennas up. So ask God to give you those, that back to you again. You need them with your kids, because what happens? Generational stuff, there's an open door for your kids there. That is the truth, you guys. That's the truth. So you know what? God will give that to you. Why? Because God doesn't want it to keep going on either. And you know what? Listen to your gut there then. Listen to your gut. Don't think, oh, I might be overreacting. No, you're not. You're keeping your child safe. Don't you wish, those of you who were abused, don't you wish somebody would have kept you safe? Would have prayed the prayer that they would have been hyper-vigilant there? And, I mean, because that, isn't that what it's about? The Lord will show us if we will ask Him for those things back. So if you were sexually abused as a child, you probably have no boundaries there, so you don't have a sense of what is safe and what isn't safe. Usually, that's what I've seen, okay? So ask God to give that back to you. God, I need boundaries there for my kids. I need to watch. I need to have eyes to see. See. And then adult child codependency, where you're still being controlled by your parents, even though you're an adult with your own family, because you never process your childhood. You're so wrapped up in their life and they in your life that you can't live your own life. See? Parents need to let their adult children go physically, emotionally, and socially. Physically, emotionally, and socially. We're supposed to do that. Okay, many parents are so enmeshed with their children, they seek to get their emotional and social needs met by their adult children, which should be met by their spouse or other adult friends of their own age. It's the truth. You see it all the time. So, where am I? Okay, so I'm going to go over to the page because I'm going to, got to be quick now. Got to go quick. About codependency and Christian living, because for the church, this is the big issue. You can read those other things on your own. On the surface, codependent messages sound like Christian teachings. Codependents always put others first before taking care of themselves. Aren't Christians supposed to put others first? Aren't they? We were taught that. Jesus, others, and then yourself. That's how you find joy. That's a crock. It really is. Because what does the Bible teach? You can only love others as much as you love and care for yourself in a right way. And that's the truth. You can't even give it. If you have self-hate, What are you giving out? It's the truth. Think about it. Think about the spiritual dynamic there. It's the truth. Codependents give themselves away. Shouldn't Christians give themselves away? Codependents martyr themselves. Christianity honors its martyrs. Codependency says, I have little or no value. Is that what God says about you? Codependency says, other people's and situations have all the value. And some of you have felt like that in group. Why don't I can't tell my story because my story isn't as valuable as these other people. Not true. Codependency says, I must please other people regardless of the cost to my person or to my values. Codependency says, I am to place myself to be used by others without protest. A person who is available most of the time is not much good when they are. That's the truth. Codependency says, I must give myself away. If I claim any rights for myself, I'm a selfish human being. I must repress all my feelings. Jesus taught what? The value of the individual. He said we are to love others equally to ourselves, not more than ourselves, but equally to ourselves. A love of self forms a basis for loving others. The difference between a life of service and codependency takes several forms. And the chief thing is the motive. The motive. Does the individual give his service and himself out of free choice or because he considers himself of no value? Does he seek to please people? Does he act out of guilt and fear? Does he act out of a need to be needed, which means he actually uses the other person to what? Meet his own needs. The helpee becomes an object to help the helper achieve their own goals. Service is to be an act of choice. The person acts, codependents react. You know, one time, because it's, what is God always after? The issues of our hearts. He's always after our heart motives. Jesus was the only one that ever had pure heart motives. For all the rest of us, it's a mix, and that's the truth. You might as well just settle that for yourself. And only God can show us when our motives are stinking. You know, God, show me why I want to serve. Is it because I need to be needed? Or is it because you're asking me to? Again, Jesus is our example. He only did what his Father told him to do. He only prayed the prayers his Father told him to pray. He only touched and healed the people his Father told him to. Many people, the multitudes came. The multitudes came. Why was his ministry so successful? Yes, he was the Son of God. But more importantly than that, because he only did what his Father told him to. There have been times I might get myself in trouble with this one, so. There have been times when I have known that I've known that I've known that the Spirit of the Lord told me specifically to pray for somebody for healing. And do you know what? They got healed. So again, don't hear what I'm not saying, but isn't it a question? I think we need to ponder some of these things. That's what I think. I think all of us need to ponder some of these things. Anyone that Jesus prayed for and touched got healed, didn't they? Wonder why? Isn't it a pondering question? So, just something to think about. And if we are codependent, we are just, you know, doing all the stuff. And some of it's really good stuff. But is it the stuff that your father's asked you to do? Or are you doing it out of your own need to be needed or your own unhealedness? Just ask God the question. Ask God the question. The other thing that happens is that if we would all only do what God asks us to do, it makes room for other people to do things too. That's another thing that I see sometimes in the body. You know, there was a person I talked to on the phone not too long ago, and she was saying she was kind of upset because somebody hadn't asked her to speak at this certain thing. And, you know, and I thought to myself, and I said to her, I said, you know, you need to move over. You need to move over. There's other people that need to come up behind. See, you know, do we ever think like that? That maybe, see, doesn't offend me when they don't ask me to speak at places. And when they do, my first question is, God, are you asking me? Or will this just make me feel good? Jesus never failed because he only did what the Father asked him to do. He wasn't a codependent person or a people pleaser. Codependence behavior is addictive rather than balanced. Addictions control the person instead of the person being in charge of his or her own life on the part of the other person. Now, there was a gal good, it's still going, I'm very happy. There, I'm codependent with this. There was a gal who was going to, when Earl and I were assistant directors of New Wine, who was coming to New Wine, she was like in her early 30s and got pregnant and was not married, and she was thinking about having an abortion. I met with her, and she chose to go to a shepherding house, and so we kind of took her under our wing, okay? And financially, we were able to do some things for her, like, you know, just simple things, pay to get a telephone, just things like that. And along the way, there were other things. After she had the baby, I coached her, and her and the baby came and stayed at our house for like 5 days after. And so we were very close with them, and we were able to help her financially. And one day, the Lord said this to me. I don't want you to do that anymore unless you ask me. I don't want you to give her anything more or do it unless you ask me first. Because she is beginning to see you as her source. And I have other people in the body of Christ to meet some of those needs. So even when I wanted to buy her a simple thing like diapers, I had to go to the Lord and clear it with him. Because what happens? People become dependent on you, not on God. And you know what? That really feels good for our egos. Let's face the facts. Face the facts. So those are the kinds of things that we do in codependency or trying to please all the time rather than listening to what God is saying. God had the body of Christ. Again, a codependent sense of self-worth is tied up in helping others. Christianity says that a person has worth simply because he's a human being created by God. One's self-worth is separate from the work one does or the service one renders. Now, if I never did another thing for God, if I never did another seminar, if I never did another 12-week class, if I never ministered to one more person, it would not affect God's love for me. That's the truth. If I never read the Word again, it would not affect God's love for me. If I never went to church again, it would not affect God's love for me. Because that can't be bought. It can't be bought by the service you render. You know that? And that's really hard for people who are codependent because most of the time you're trying to buy all that stuff by helping, rescuing, fixing, doing for. Codependence every morning They need to get up and look at the palms of their hands and realize there's no nail scars. You are nobody's savior. You are nobody's rescuer. Some of you who are highly codependent need to stop all kinds of service for a little bit. That's the truth, because you can't tell the difference. You cannot tell the difference. Codependents have difficulty living balanced lives. They do for others at the neglect of their own well-being and health. Christian faith calls for balanced living and taking care of yourself. Jesus only did what the Father instructed him. Codependent helping is joyless. Christian service brings joy. When I get overcommitted, guess what? My joy goes, and so does yours. When you are overcommitted, you are stressed out, and you are not a happy person to be around. I can tell you that. Because that's how we are. I'm not any different than you guys are. I know that in my own life. I know when I get totally overcommitted, I'm not a lot of fun to be around. Of course, I would with you guys, but at home, talk to Earl. I mean, isn't that the truth? Let's get honest. So you have to learn to take care of yourself in a healthy way. You know, not get overcommitted. Sometimes you're so overcommitted. What is that about? Not ever wanting to face yourself or look at yourself. Codependents are driven by their inner compulsions. Christians are God-centered and can be free from compulsiveness, knowing that God brings the ultimate results. Codependents take full responsibility for the outcome of events. Christians do their work and recognize that the results come from God. You know what? I really pray that all of you lean into Him during this time, but I can't make you do it. It's up to you. And I'm not responsible whether you get from God what you came to get or not. It really is your responsibility. And that was really freeing when I finally got to that place. Because I wasn't always there either, you know. That's the truth. Codependency is perfectionistic and merciless. Codependency creates a religion of works. Codependency feels filled with guilt and shame. Codependents do not have much actual faith in God. They have a pseudo-faith. They genuinely consider themselves to have faith, yet have low trust in God on a deep level. They sometimes view God as hostile and uncaring and model this type of God before others. Because I'll tell you what, if you think God is standing behind you with a whip, trusting God means that you can let go of people. Trusting God, a codependent cannot allow another person the consequences of their own behavior. They usually seek to control and help others to avoid the consequences, and then they want to be appreciated in return. Then they're mad when you don't appreciate it. That is the truth. See, God lets us suffer the consequences, doesn't He? Why? Because He's a loving Father. Do you know what consequences do? Consequences help us to understand that when we do something wrong, there's a consequence for it. If you are forever helping to keep people from ever facing their consequences, whether it's financial ruin or whatever it is, you're giving them the message that what they're doing has no consequences. That's not true. That's not life. God lets us suffer consequences, doesn't He? Now, sometimes He has incredible mercy. And that's the truth, mercy and grace. And sometimes we need to have the same thing, but when He tells us, sometimes we honestly need to get our hands off and let the person come to the end of themselves, whether it's financial, emotionally, or spiritually. Because you know what that will do? It'll throw them into the arms of who can really help them. God. Has it really worked anyway? Never worked when I did that with my son. Really didn't. It made me feel better. Because codependency is about me feeling better. It's not about that other person. Although it looks very righteous like it is. But see, that's the twist. That's the lie. I'm really helping the other person. No. you really need to feel okay, and you don't feel okay unless they're okay. So you're going to do whatever it takes to make them okay, whether that's paying all their bills or whether that's rescuing them from jail or whatever that looks like. That's what you're going to do. Okay? Now, when our son was still drinking, Earl and I consciously made some decisions about what we were going to do for the grandkids. We made a decision that there were some things that maybe hardline 12-step people would say, oh, you're enabling. But you know what? We were going to protect the children. Okay? That wasn't about being codependent with my son. That was about protecting our grandchildren. Okay, so there isn't, so don't get mixed up there. And we knew, we consciously made some choices. And one of those choices was, I told my daughter-in-law that the days that our son was supposed to pick the children up from daycare, that I would be totally available. If she called him and could tell that he'd been drinking or he didn't show up, I would be there available to pick those children up. There were other things that we did for the safety of the children, and we consciously made the choices. That's not codependency. Okay, so don't get mixed up with that, especially when you have grandkids, okay? But for our adult son, we did not rescue him, and we planned an intervention. Why? Because we loved him, and he needed help. See. Where am I? Let's see. Codependency is judgmental and gives conditional love. Christianity, oh, I know what it was too. The other thing that we did is that, and you know, you'll make mistakes along the way. And one day I had the children at my house, and some relatives are visiting from Minneapolis, and my son came to pick them up, and he had been drinking, okay? And I let him take them home. And I knew that I should not have done that. So what I did is that, because I wasn't codependent with my son anymore, is that I called my daughter-in-law the next day, and I said, I was wrong to let our son take the children home because he had been drinking, and please forgive me for that. And I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk to my son about setting a boundary and telling him that he cannot take the children from our house if he's been drinking. And she said, do you want me to tell him? I said, no, it's not your place to tell him. It's my place to tell him. So then I asked the Lord to give me a place and a time. So I went to their house a couple days later, and all of a sudden, my son and I were just in the living room alone. Nobody else was around, because God gives you the opportunities. He hadn't been drinking that evening. And I said, son, I need to talk to you about something. He said, what's that? And I said, the other night when you came to pick up the kids at my house, you'd been drinking, and I was wrong to let you take them. And I'm telling you right now that from now on, if they're at our house and you come and you've been drinking, you will not be allowed to take them from our house. And if you try, I will call the police. My boundary. And you know what? He never came to our house having drinking to pick the kids up again. See? Because he knew what I said I meant. Wasn't going to. It wasn't safe. And then I said, you know what, son? I said, if something ever happened when you were driving with those kids in the car, you would never forgive yourself. You would never be able to forgive yourself, son. And isn't that the truth? And I was grateful one more time for my own recovery and healing that I could lay the cards on the table, not be codependent with my son, whether he liked it or not. That was my boundary. Codependency causes people to allow others to treat them insultingly. Christianity teaches the dignity of every human being. And isn't that the truth? Codependency says we exist only and totally to serve others. Christianity teaches we have value within ourselves. And that it is not, that it is okay to do things for ourselves, but that we also must do that if we are to develop and mature as mature spiritual beings. Codependency rejects. Codependents are closed. Codependency causes people to try to control others and try to force people to do what's right. God gives choices. God does not force. And you know what? There's not enough words in the English language to get you to change somebody else's mind. However, most of us have a repertoire of them, right? Although it doesn't work, we still try it again, right? Codependency is manipulative. Service is rendered with some thought of gain, even if it is to make the servant feel good. Codependency is always serving others for wrong motives. Codependency leads to repression of feelings. The Bible teaches that God created us as beings who have feelings, okay? Codependence has an inability to identify or express their own personal feelings, but they can tell you what everybody else is feeling, especially those who they're very codependent with. Codependency sacrifices individuals for the sake of the system. Codependency is hostile. God is more interested in what he does in you than through you. Did you know that? Interesting. The codependent may find it helpful to pull out of many activities and look seriously at their motives and reasons for functioning as they do. Again, codependency doesn't have much to do with other people. It has to do with me feeling okay. It's self-centered and self-seeking. So, here's some questions. And this helped me a lot. Whenever you are doing something for somebody else that they could and should be doing for themselves, then you are codependent. Okay? Whenever you are doing something for someone else that they could and should be doing for themselves, other than small children, okay, small children, age appropriate. Again, being a Christian means setting God-centered, healthy boundaries and lovingly sticking to them. We are to help another person carry their burdens, but only for a period of time. A crisis like a divorce, a death, or a tremendous loss can be examples of burdens to help other people carry. We weren't intended to carry those alone. People need other people during times of crisis. But if the crisis is their whole life, you may be helping them too much. If they just move from crisis to crisis, nothing ever changes, they never get any help, but you keep helping them so they don't need to, see? It says, Galatians 6:5 says, "For each one should bear his own load." And the Hebrew for load is knapsack. In other words, each of us should bear our own responsibilities. Each of us should bear our own responsibilities. If we take others' God-given responsibility, we actually rob them from growing into maturity. That is the truth. God wants us all to grow up and take right responsibility. Sometimes we're so busy trying to protect our husband, children, friend, boss, making them so comfortable, making things so easy for them, we get in the way of what God is trying to tell them and trying to do. That's the truth. The real twist is that we believe we are doing it for them. So who knows your motives? God. So who do you have to ask? God. And that's the truth. Any questions? Is it clear or is it just muddy still? Is it clearer than it was before?